Coming up on Tech News Today, precedent with the All Writs Act part of the Apple FBI case is being set right now. Google's self-driving car finds its first accident. HoloLens goes up for pre-order, and it's pretty pricey. The Internet of Useless Things and a whole lot more. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1459, recorded Monday, February 29th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Score Big. Pay less for quality seats to your favorite sporting and music events. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter promo code TNT to save $20 off your first ticket purchase.
And by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines convenient packaging, modern technology, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions.
And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit NatureBox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the tech news with people who love technology, people who understand technology. I am Megan Maroney.
And I am Jason Howell, people who work in technology and litigate in technology,
yes,
as is the case
people
today.
Who live, dream, sleep, technology.
Dream, the technology dream. Joining us today, oh man, this guy's awesome. Owen J.J. Stone, a.k.a. O-Doctor. How's it going, Owen?
I thought I was the litigator. I was going to change my Twitter to old lawyer. That's not me. You aren't talking about? Okay. My bad.
No, sure. Hey, we can all litigate a little bit today. It's that kind of day.
Switch it up.
IQMZ.com is the place to find all the things that that you are up to. You're a busy guy, right?
Yeah, I got like 4 different shows on there right now. A tech show, one of the stories we're going to talk about later I did last week. At the end of the week, a podcast where I talk about ridiculous stuff. Fun stuff going on over there.
Fantastic. So. Well, it's great to have you on the show, Owen. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And, you know, if you've been following Twitter, following the news, you know that some big news broke in the Apple FBI case just this afternoon. So joining us today is Nate Cardoza. He is the staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco. Welcome, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We've been trying to get you on to talk about this, so I'm glad that there was some breaking news. So tomorrow, Apple's chief lawyer, Bruce Sewell, testifies before Congress regarding the FBI's request for a government OS for the iPhone. Motherboard uncovered his remarks, the gist of which is that mobile encryption ought to be decided by representatives of the people, not by a warrant request based on the All Writs Act. And then just this afternoon, a federal judge in New York ruled that the U.S. could not use the All Writs Act to gain access to this phone in this case. So, Nate, what does this mean?
So the case in New York is a little bit different than the one in San Bernardino. In New York, the government was asking Apple to unlock an iOS 7 device. This is something that Apple can do relatively easily. And frankly, it's something that pretty much any of us can do with only a little bit of effort. iOS 7 doesn't have the kind of security features involved in the San Bernardino iPhone. And you can go to a company called Cellbrite, which sells a forensics tool to unlock that phone. So what Apple was saying in the New York case that was decided today was that, hey, you guys have the capability to do it yourselves. So take this All Writs Act order and shove it. It's not not something that you can force us to do if you have the capability to do it yourselves. And the judge agreed today, but he agreed in sort of a grand fashion. The judge said, Apple's right. But not only that, even if you couldn't do it yourselves, the All Writs Act doesn't permit you to order an American company to provide this kind of assistance to law enforcement.
So is the judge was saying Apple's right, but was the judge saying that people should be able to have phones that the FBI can never crack into? Is that what the judge was saying?
No, actually, so the judge doesn't address that question. The judge's opinion is limited to whether current statutory law, the All Writs Act, passed in 1789 and obviously amended several times since then, permits the government to request this kind of order. So the New York case wasn't necessarily about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for Apple to provide this kind of encryption. The New York case is limited to whether the 1789 law, the All Writs Act, permits this kind of order.
So directly from Judge Orenstein's ruling, here's kind of the nugget, I suppose, at least as far as what I was reading into it. Nothing in the government's arguments suggests any principled limit on how far the court may go in requiring a person or company to violate the most deeply rooted values to provide assistance to the government the court deems necessary. So they're basically saying, like, there's no limits here. Like, what is to stop the government for going to more and more and more? What is the kind of precedent potential, I suppose, of this in the current case that we've been talking about for almost, well, it feels like eternity, but a week and a half now? Like, how much of this kind of has the potential of rolling over and kind of bolstering Apple's case, let's say?
I think it has a big potential to bolster Apple's case in San Bernardino. And the legal issues are actually relatively similar in the two cases, even though the tech is different. If the FBI wins in either New York or in San Bernardino, there's the potential for the government to use that precedent to force companies to backdoor just about anything. And in this Internet of Things world that we live in, that could literally mean anything, all the way down to your actual door, if you have an electronic lock. So the judge in New York agreed with Apple. Apple's filing in California was crystal clear on this point, that the rule that the government is asking for has no limitation. It's not limited to this one phone. It's not limited to these two phones. It could be applied to anything. And an American technology company could be ordered, if the government's interpretation is right, to essentially redesign pretty much any system to give law enforcement entrance. And that's not the way that American justice works, should work, or really has ever worked.
So was this a surprise to Apple? I mean, were they expecting this ruling?
With the New York case?
Yeah.
Well, so the New York case has another interesting sort of procedural facet, which is the defendant in that case has already pled guilty to the crime that he's accused of. So the phone kind of doesn't matter in that case. The judge asked both parties, Apple and the FBI, if the case had been mooted by his pleading guilty. And both parties said no. But I think everybody was expecting Judge Orenstein in New York to wait until after Judge Pim in California issued her ruling. The case is you know, all of the litigators are focused on San Bernardino, and it was surprising to see Judge Orenstein's ruling come out when it did.
So that's the New York ruling is not really about the phone, just as we've been talking about the San Bernardino ruling is not really about the phone.
That's right. This is about whether the government has the power to compel a backdoor. And the New York judge said very clearly, no.
Well, Nate, thank goodness. Oh, go ahead.
No, from a regular perspective, a lot of people don't understand the concept of what's going on. Once you open a back door to something, it also allows other people to get into that system, too. It's not like you just give it to the government and, oh, the government's so trusted, like they're not getting hacked by teenagers every other weekend. It's a very delicate thing. And, you know, people make the argument on the news and the media, oh, well, who cares if somebody hacks and takes your pictures or whatever? You have bank accounts tied there, Social Security information. All kinds of stuff. Everything's in everyone's phone now. I know a lot of people don't have computers. They use their phone for everything. So that is a very, very important thing that people don't realize. They think, oh, well, what if a hacker gets, it's not a big deal, they'll just get your pictures. There's more than that going on with what the government wants Apple to do here.
And that's a good point, Owen. Cryptographers and computer scientists who've looked at this issue are unanimous, like literally unanimous, that what the FBI is asking for can't be done safely. It's like climate change. On one side, there's entrenched political interests, and on the other side is science. And Judge Orenstein luckily chose the side of science.
Well, Nate, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, this case isn't going to go away, but this is, I guess, one point for Apple, a good sign for them if you're on that team. So hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you again when the next big news breaks. So thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Nate.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
Nate is at the EFF staff attorney.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
awesome stuff. And such late breaking news. So we're really happy to get him at the very last minute. So moving on to maybe lighter news, let's say. How does the Raspberry Pi team celebrate leap years? They release a new Raspberry Pi, apparently. The first Raspberry Pi was released during the last leap year. And in similar fashion, the Raspberry Pi 3 is now a thing that exists today. And it can exist for you for $35. That's the same price as the Raspberry Pi 2. I've got a Raspberry Pi 2 going into a arcade MAME cabinet that is taking a while to kind of turn around, but still working on it. I'm on the fence whether I should just get the Raspberry Pi 3 and base it on that. What do you think, Owen? Have you had or played around with any of these Raspberry Pis before?
I played around with two, and my mindset was to scratch it and start over again. So that might be my suggestion to you too. Plus, just having a little bit more power and newer things are generally better, especially when you're geeked out and you buy everything that you don't really need per se. But it's one of those things. I already ordered one, so you gotta get on it.
I know, and you got to do it soon because they have a tendency to sell out at least when they're first announced.
Yes.
And get in on it quick. So some of the things that it's bringing as an improvement over the last model, 64-bit processor, although there's not really any, that makes room for a 64-bit OS, but there aren't really any standards for Pi at the moment in that regard. So that's maybe a forward, looking thing. It also includes a wireless combo chip that brings Wi-Fi 802.11n and Bluetooth 4.0 connectivity on the board, so you don't need any sort of wireless hardware connected separately and occupying one of the few USB ports on the device. It also has new viewer video hardware, which basically means 1080p video at 60 frames per second using H.264. So definitely an improvement. And what's crazy about this, every time they do this, they bring it out at the same exact price. So it's not like you're having to spend any more. It's always $35, which is a drop in the bucket for a computer that you can literally carry around in your pocket and that you can build into so many cool things.
Especially now that you have the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth built on the board, you don't have to have the little dongle anymore.
Totally.
That's the other reason why I want one, because that just saves you one extra slot and one more thing that you don't have to carry around with you.
Yep.
Yeah, the opportunities for students and hobbyists, it's amazing and great, especially when you think of it compared to our previous story when we're talking about, things that are just inside that people don't really understand how they work. People don't understand how encryption works. A lot of our government doesn't really understand how this works. I love that, that there's this whole generation of people who are really, understanding the innards of our technology and how they work. I tried to buy an Adafruit device for my 12-year-old nephew, which required a soldering iron, and my sister was very upset at me. She was like, really? You're the worst sister ever. Do not buy my 13-year-old something that requires a soldering iron. But
they're going to burn themselves at least once.
Yeah.
But that's how you learn. Come on.
Yes,
that's how
exactly.
You learn.
13 is a good age. It's not 8 years old.
Right, right.
13, there'd be worse things you could be doing with fire.
Totally. Totally.
Absolutely. There are.
And probably are, and you just don't know about it.
Right. And those 13-year-olds might be the ones that are not behind the wheels of the self-driving cars. So moving on to our next story, Google's self-driving car, one of their Lexuses, rolled slowly into a bus, causing an accident. No one was hurt. But this, of course, is what we've been waiting for. The first time an autonomous car was at fault in an accident. There was a driver who didn't take the wheel. He said he thought the bus was going to yield, and it did not. And Chris Urmson, who is in charge of the self-driving car project at Google, said, he's not sure. He said they take some responsibility, but maybe not all the responsibility.
Yeah, it was interesting. It kind of posed the question in my mind, at what point do you blame the technology? Because the thing about driving, especially when it's technology driving versus people driving, is people are always unpredictable. And so a computer can only go so far
into predicting what another person is actually going to do. And that's a big part of what they were talking about here. It wasn't just the live driver that was in there, you know, being driven around by the automated, you know, vehicle, that, you know, not only he thought that the bus was going to slow down, but so did the computer. The computer had actually factored it out and figured the likelihood is that this bus is going to slow down and yield, and it did not. So they've tweaked their algorithm so that, you know, to reflect that buses don't always yield. I just think it's so interesting how all of these things kind of go into play piece by piece. And over time, I guess it gets smarter. Do you trust them, Owen?
I am anti-car driving systems because I like to drive, but I know that it's necessary for the future. So two things. One, this is the best thing in the world that could ever happen because now I can yell at people telling them that they're so excited about self-driving cars. Also, with that note, it also gives them a chance to learn. Accidents are what they are. Mm-hmm. Accidents. So if an autonomous car never had an accident, it would never have an opportunity to learn from its mistake. So luckily no one was hurt. Nobody died in this instance, but an accident is a good thing because the system gets to be updated and learned. Secondly, me personally, unless every car is automated, you're still going to end up with an accident because people are crazy.
Exactly.
I could be crying about my dog ran away this morning. I wipe my eye with a tear. Next thing you know, I take that bus off a cliff. A computer can't prepare for that in my bad day. So, I mean, unless every car is autonomous, we're going to have accidents.
But I don't know.
Small accidents like this are good.
The computers of the future might be able to figure that you would have an itch in your eye at that very moment. They can calculate all of the possibilities,
The car's got one of those eye scanner things like the BMW, maybe.
Yeah.
So I can tell if you fall asleep or something, I think. Mm-hmm, BMW.
Yeah.
Mercedes or BMW has that?
Yeah. Self-driving cars cannot come soon enough for me. I hate driving, and I'm bad at it, and I will admit. And, you know, the statistics don't lie. There are 3,287 deaths a day. I think that might just be in the United States from, you know, and so this one, exactly, you know, it will learn from its mistakes and move on. But
as any good computer neural network will.
Yes.
Snapchat is moving beyond your smartphone, if last night is any indication. With a relatively low-key update to its site, Snapchat brought its Oscars live stories to the Snapchat website. You can actually go there now and watch the live story. I watched through the whole thing. As a person who did not watch the Oscars because, well, I don't have TV anymore. I cut the cord and I haven't got an HD tuner, so I didn't watch it at all. So I actually found it kind of interesting. Like, I learned some things about the results that I hadn't looked up yet. But, a little chaotic. I mean, the Snapchat stories are what they are, right? Little pieces from an event all kind of compiled together. It certainly paints a picture. I'm not sure how complete the picture is, but certainly interesting. And the fact that they're now putting it on the web has some interesting potential for the future, for, you know, maybe someday embedding this kind of stuff into your site if you have an event. I don't know.
Owen, I know you watched the Oscars because I watched them through your Twitter feed. I didn't watch them either, but you were an excellent live tweeter. What do you think of Snapchat versus Twitter?
So as I am a person who is on Snapchat, I have never made a Snapchat. I've been on Snapchat forever, but I've never used it. I understand the uses of it. I understand the purpose of it. But I have a thing that's called non-ADHD. Like, I can actually focus on something and read a book. Like, looking at that feed you just put on there, it almost gave me an aneurysm. Like, it's so chaotic and so frivolous and so shaky. Like, somebody curated this, and it's still like, you're jumping from backstage to the street to the, like, what is going on? And I understand the purpose of Snapchat, and Lord knows, if there wasn't a sex industry, Snapchat would be dead by now. But I get it. It's just not for me. Putting on the web, cool. I guess if people are too lazy to look at their phone while they're looking at their TV, but they didn't stream the Oscars online live, so what purpose does that have for being on a desktop? I guess it's just easier, maybe.
Well, I think they want people, old people, to understand Snapchat.
They want to bring the oldies in.
My mom's on Snapchat, and I ripped into her big time. I was like, you know, I was going through her phone, and I was like, why do you have Snapchat? She's like, what's Snapchat? I'm like, don't what's Snapchat me. You got Snapchat on your phone. She blamed it on her girlfriends, when her girlfriends made her sign up for it. I didn't trust it. I don't know. I told her, I was like, look, don't make me delete Snapchat. The old people are on there too now.
Yeah, they
are. Everybody's snapping.
Mm-hmm. It's quickly becoming the not so cool for cool kids place, I'm guessing, as more old people end up in the
people don't like. So what we're talking about reading, people don't like to type. So on Instagram, okay, you make a video, you got to say something. On Snapchat, maybe you throw a text across the screen, but for the most part, it's like, here's my sandwich. Here's me walking down the street. you don't have to do anything but videotape what you're doing in that moment or take a picture of it. You don't really have to say anything. So it's so immediate and easy for people to grasp.
See, you could make a live story around your sandwich, Owen. I'm just saying. Like, people would watch that.
So,
yep.
It's been done. Yeah, the shaky cam is interesting. I hadn't thought of that because those are people that are, like, they're in the film business. They're, you know, those are people clearly on the floor of, you know, like, they understand and it's still shaky.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those things where, oh, okay, so if you don't have TV, if you're a cable cutter, I guess that's cool. But if you're a cord cutter, you're probably not watching Oscars anyway because you're going to download all them. Like, you're just in a different mindset for the people they're trying to reach with this. Because when you're looking at this, it's like, who really cares? You're 14 feet away. If I turn on my TV, I'm right zoomed in. The audio's horrible. There's people talking around. I get that you got to do it because you're trying to be a part of something and they want to make it a big deal. You know, maybe next time it'll be basketball games or a Super Bowl or something like that. But for the most part, I'm like... You know, keep snapping, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure they're gonna open it up.
What about the disappearing aspect of it? Like, that's what appeals to me, and that's what I think appeals. I mean, I have a 13-year-old, so that's what appeals to her and her friends, I think. Just, you don't have to, like, curate yourself. You're not a museum. You can put things on there, and they disappear, and your old parents like me don't see it.
So, yeah, if you're a criminal, it's great to go out and commit crimes and have all the evidence disappear. But in general, if I'm out here trying to build something, if I'm trying to build these stories and I made the best story of all time and my story's gone, I'm like, wait a second. I just gave the Snapchat the best story of my life and it's gone. It is gone. So what's the point of building these stories that only a third of the people get to see before it disappears? Come on, man. So as much as selling the story of disappearing is great, when people put in effort, your effort is gone.
Yeah, but so, you know what? I think it's tailor-made to the particular platform, right? Like, Twitter is meant for longevity. Facebook's meant for longevity. Snapchat and the core user base doesn't care about longevity. So if you're building something, you're building something about what you can create right now that disappears soon after, and that's okay. As long as you keep doing that, you keep speaking to the people who are devoted to the platform like you are, then... You know, you might be someday a Snapchat star. We just can't even comprehend that because we're so used to stuff sticking around all the time. But I think it's, and, you know, in the same way that there are Vine stars. You know what I mean?
And there are Snapchat stars. There are people that, again, they tell their stories and their stories disappear. I'm being over the top against the argument.
Sure, sure.
But, I mean, you know, it's just funny to me, like, when people put so much effort into things and they disappear. But that's also a good thing because that's what makes it popular. Like you said, especially with kids. If I can talk back and forth to a whole group of my friends and say the outlandish stuff that I say sometimes, and then it goes away and there's like no repercussions of it, that is great.
Yeah.
Because kids say dumb things all the time. Everybody says dumb things every once in a while.
Except for it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't go away. That's the other thing. Like, you know, it goes away, but someone can snap, you know, someone can screenshot it. You know, that's the same. Yeah. It's sort of the same idea of Twitter. Like, you think you're only tweeting to a few people. If you don't have a big audience, you think you're not going to offend anyone. And all of a sudden, like, you've said something horrible because maybe you are actually a horrible person. And then it gets sent out. You know, we saw that last night with, you know, Twitter, the total beauty comment where... where some random site, I guess they had some followers, but it was a beauty site, and they posted a picture of Whoopi Goldberg and said it was Oprah Winfrey, and it was ridiculous. And then all of a sudden you see those, like, that one mistake, you think your audience is this big, and all of a sudden you're everywhere.
Yeah, they had 57,000 followers.
Oh, they
even
did?
Even if you think 10%, see, they might have blew up in that hour. They might only start out with 20,000. I don't know. But when I saw it, they had a lot of followers. So even only 10% saw it. You know, my friend sent it to me. And I was like, how did you see this so quick? And one of the guys he follows is like a wrestler or something retweet. I'm like, you got this from a wrestler? Like, it blew my mind how quick that set fire.
Right. And it doesn't make it okay. You know, I mean, if you have, like, if you're putting yourself out there publicly at all, you know, you need to be smarter.
There are worse things that have been said on the internet than being mistaken for Oprah Winfrey.
That's true. That is true. All right. Well, let's move on. There are two headsets you can order today. Later, we'll talk about Microsoft's augmented reality headset, the HoloLens. Today, you can also pre-order the HTC Vive at $800. And with no idea what the games and apps will be, who is going to order this?
Little bit of idea. I mean, they have, like, you get a bonus 3 games and apps if you pre-order. You get Job Simulator.
But you don't know what they'll feel like. You don't know what it'll be like. It's not something that you can...
I'm guessing anybody who's really going to buy into this first round of ER is kind of doing it on, you know, kind of on a wing and a prayer, like hoping that the platform is going to live up to its potential.
The answer is crickets or media people or someone looking to do a review on the first thing out. When you don't tell me what's like, hey, I got this new car coming out. Okay, is it a coupe? Is it a four-door? Is it a hey, look, it's a Lexus. You want one? Like, come on. You know, you got to give me something.
Yeah. Well, a tilt brush, it's 3D painting.
No, I mean, it looks cool, but that's a lot of money to spend on something that looks cool. I mean, I think you're right, Owen. Like, if you're going to review it, awesome. You have the best job ever.
Yeah.
Can I review it?
Like, especially when there's other options. It'd be different if this came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, if this came out, this was, like, the first thing out before all this other stuff was available. I mean, they're giving away little VR units when you buy a S7 now. So, I mean, like, if you would have got on this maybe a year ago, I'd have been like, yeah, sure, why not try it? But right now, it's like, I got a couple other things I could throw money at the wall at that I actually know kind of what's going on.
I think hardcore gamers are willing to kind of to take the bait, at least, and at least commit to one platform. I think ultimately, long-term, I'm guessing the same games, you know, minus some exclusives here and there, are going to be produced for both platforms. You know, so really it's just a matter of what speaks to them, which kind of support, be it Oculus or be it Valve, do they identify with and they want to see, you know, more stuff from. I don't know. I think there's enough people. It's totally early days. I'm not saying that it's not, but I think people who are really dedicated to gaming and the concept of VR are willing to kind of make the gamble on an $800 bet, which I guess is more than $800 because they need a PC also to drive it, but.
People who want to be first.
Yeah. And yes, absolutely. They certainly want to be first.
That's a good answer. Mm-hmm. I'll buy that. That's
it's all
answer.
Those people that like comment on your YouTube video first.
Mm-hmm.
Those I was are the playing people. That back before it was anything. I got it when it had no games. I just looked into the abyss and waited for 4 months.
It was just deep space. And I just kept looking. There was nothing up there.
It's amazing.
All right. Coming up, if you want a HoloLens, whether you're a developer or not, we now know how many pennies you're going to need to save in order to get one. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That's Score Big. What's the next big event that you want to attend? Is it a musical act like Wicked, a Bruce Springsteen concert, a local baseball game? Heck, the whole family might enjoy Frozen on Ice, or really, the kids will love it. The parents will be happy that the kids love it. I've always wanted to see Book of Mormon myself. I've never had a chance to see it. It just hasn't happened yet. Whatever it happens to be, you can bet that there's a way to pay less for better seats. How? You just go to scorebig.com. 40% of all live event tickets go unsold. I didn't realize that. ScoreBig is making it easy to attend live events by working directly with your favorite teams, your favorite artists, to get their unsold seats at unpublished prices. So you just go to the site, you scan around, you're going to find stuff that you want to see. That's what it's all about. At ScoreBig.com, you're always guaranteed huge savings by paying much less than what the box office charges for the tickets. And they have awesome deals on tickets to concerts, sports games, Broadway productions. If you're in New York City, it's perfect. You know, you're taking a trip to New York City, do this. Family-friendly events all across the board. Wherever you happen to be, you're going to find events that are close to you and you can save. To take advantage of these amazing deals, all you got to do is visit scorebig.com, find the event and the seats that you want, and then you can make an offer with ScoreBig's name a ticket price feature. And you'll receive an answer from ScoreBig instantly. You can save up to 60% on your tickets. And we know tickets are expensive normally, so this really brings the price down into achievable territory, let's say. You also have an option to pay a fixed price, which is much less expensive than major online ticket resellers. With ScoreBig, there are no surprise fees, and you get free shipping. You can even favorite shows. I love this feature. You go to a show, even if it's not, you know, available right now, you can tap the heart. That'll favorite it. The shows, events, whatever you happen to be, and you'll be notified on upcoming dates to attend, which, I mean, as you can imagine, is super convenient because then you don't need to know when it's coming. It will notify you. Quit overpaying for tickets. Get the tickets you want at prices you can afford with ScoreBig. The next time you're planning to attend a game or a show, visit ScoreBig first and see how much you can save. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter promo code TNT to save an extra $20 off your first ticket purchase. That's scorebig.com, promo code TNT. All right, in the grand 2016 tradition of AR and VR pricing reveals, Microsoft is not ready to be left behind. So they have today's announcement that the HoloLens development kit is available for pre-order. And joining us to talk all about this is Mike Murphy from Quartz. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to get you back. So first things first, what's the cost? And I'll try my best not to do a spit take when you say it.
So yeah, it's $3,000 US, not like Canadian dollars or Australian dollars. It is $3,000, which is obviously a lot more than HTC Vive or Facebook's Oculus Rift. But you know, it does seem like Microsoft might have a reason for this being so much more expensive. But we'll see.
Well, it's the developer's edition, right? I mean, it's for people that are going to make their living off of this device, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but the Oculus Rift development editions were like $400. So I don't know. I can see them charging a lot. I bet you, I have no idea how much an Xbox developer edition costs, but I bet that was probably quite costly when it first came out. But the rationale probably is the fact that the HoloLens has all of the computing power and, you know, everything it needs to run inside it, unlike unlike the Vive or or the Rift, where you need to plug it into a $1,000 computer to make sure it even works. So you add that together, you're probably looking at closer to $2,000 to get one of the VR systems to work. So it's still considerably more expensive, but then again, it is the developer's edition, so who knows what it'll actually cost when regular people who don't develop games get their hands on it.
What exactly comes with the dev kit? Like, do we know specs, kind of some of the details on what's in the box?
So it comes with, that's a good question. I've completely forgotten. It seems like so long ago that I wrote this 7 hours ago. It comes with, oh, there we go. It's on the screen. Look at that. It comes with a clicker, which is, I guess, somewhere between like an Apple TV remote and something that you might actually use to play games. It doesn't exactly seem like the controllers that the Vive is coming with or the ones that are going to come out for the Rift. It seems far more basic. It's got all the kind of, fancy stuff that you want to be thrown in with something that costs so many thousands of dollars, like a case and a little nice little cloth and that sort of thing. But it's not going to be vastly different than like what the Vive is giving you. It's not like there's going to be someone hand deliver, Bill Gates isn't coming over to hand deliver this for you. So I don't really know where the $3,000 is going. It's got a pretty powerful processor on board, but again, it's nothing that it's not like comparable to what's in a $2,000 Mac or anything like that. So it is a first generation product. It is, the first of its kind, and it's really got no direct competitor. So, they can kind of charge what they want right now, at least.
Kind of reminds me of the Google Glass Explorer Edition earlier. I think I can't remember if they called it Explorer Edition from day one, but basically you had to sign up for the right to be granted potentially the right to pay a lot of money for their hardware. Is that kind of what's going on right here? You sign up for the pre-order and then maybe you'll be selected to get in on the ground floor?
Yeah, it's exactly that. And there's, I think, a few worrying other corollaries to Google Glass in that, like, it's really expensive. It's this weird thing where it's kind of VR, but also just, like, looking through it real life. It doesn't seem like something you'd wear in public for fear of people looking at you really weird. And I don't know, the glass didn't find its market. It might have just been that it was too early. But I mean, look at these people in this promo video. That person looks very odd. If that person was sitting next to me at work, I'd be like, why are you wearing a giant set of binoculars to do the spreadsheet? It'll be interesting to see if something can cost $3,000 and really provide the kind of use case that they say it's going to. I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. Owen, I feel like I've seen so many characters in science fiction. Particularly, I'm thinking of one character. I can't remember their name because I'm not that nerd, you know, that detailed or nerdy about the science, the Star Wars universe.
Jory LaForge.
But where they're, yeah, well, that's one example. I'm thinking of Star Wars, though. He was wearing these big goggles and he's bald. Anyways, so there's precedent in sci-fi for people wearing these things. Do you think 5 years from now this is going to be, you know, normal in the work in the workplace? So, I couldn't even get through that. I'm sorry.
First of all, let me just admit that I talked about this with Leo, and I bashed all VR, all this stuff. I thought it is the silliest thing in the world. Lawnmower Man came out how long ago? You know, the real world is great. I love the real world. Why do I need to put something on my face? But I will say that a video came out with a HoloLens about, and they were watching football and sports, and it, man, I tell you what, it drove me off a cliff, made me do a 360 flight mode, because I love football, I love sports. So if I could sit there and get, like, you know, Marshawn Lynch busting through my wall, or like get my own analytics run on the screen or the table in front of me, that looks so cool and interesting to me. It was the first time I got interested about anything that they're doing. But as far as sitting around with people that are sitting next to you, if you're sitting in your office at work, you're used to people looking stupid. Hopefully you're in a cubicle and you don't have to look them directly. But in your own home, people look stupid in their own home all the time. That's not a big deal. Now, if you go walk around outside and you're playing duck hunt in the middle of the street, I assume somebody's going to have a problem with you. But, oh, here it is. Like that. Like that right there. I need that in my life. Like that.
Yeah.
Like
that's
that.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, the problem with that, though, is that, like, that's not actually what you're going to be seeing on HoloLens. I don't know if you've tried it, but, like, the field of view is like, you know, a tiny little rectangle in front of your face, kind of like this. So it looks really, really cool for a tiny bit. But like that's the real problem. Like, it's $3,000 for a ViewMaster. You know, yeah. it's not yet any kind of awesome thing. Like, even if it's, you know, you're looking at a whole wall, you might only see an augmented reality thing. Like, not like what this guy's doing. It's really a pretty small thing. So it's a really awesome idea, but I don't know if they're actually, like, I don't think this version is going to be able to allow you to watch Marshawn Lynch bust through your wall in any kind of way where you're not like, oh, I feel like I'm watching a TV slightly to the left of where my TV is. So
Don't bring me back to reality. I understand that this is a stupid, gimmicky thing that makes absolutely no sense and has no use and no purpose. Because when I'm doing Skype calls, I need to make little squirrely cars on my wall or like all this. Like, again, when Leah was showing, I'm like, so I need to sit in my living room and make a fake fish tank in the corner with a fake clock. Like, I got a real clock and a real fish tank. Why do I – like, it serves absolutely no purpose. And that's why they have it set for $3,000, so that regular people with any kind of common sense won't even bother doing it. Because when you spend $3,000 on it, you're going to love it and you're going to tell how great it is, because you know in your heart you just wasted $3,000. You better find something to find this system viable for.
That was a big, that was a big thing going around Google Glass, actually. The same deal. It was like, why would it cost this much? The only thing I could possibly imagine is so that it makes sure that anybody who's willing to spend that money is going to be devoted to the platform and do interesting things with it. And we saw some of that. It's just the Steam, you know, the Steam left the train, I guess. I don't know the analogy.
Now that Marshawn's not busting through my wall, you can throw this in the trash with the rest of the stuff.
Well, I think that we're talking about the future promise of it. I think that was the problem with Google Glass, too. I mean, it was delivered as like this consumer product, and that's not what it was. I mean, and this not what this is either. It's for developers to find these amazing apps. And can we just stop for a second and say, I think the headset looks pretty good in comparison to what the other headsets that we've seen, and to the way people described it who had tried it in the past. They said it was heavy, they said it was huge, and they kept saying, like, this is just a prototype, this isn't what it is. I don't think it looks that bad. I mean, it's not that much bigger than just sunglasses.
You're getting used to the look of a headset, Megan. That's what's happening.
Yeah, I guess I am.
And that's a different experience than VR also. That's why the headset looks a little different.
Yeah.
You're not really enclosed in your own world, per se. You're just, again, how he described it, you're looking through into the real world. So
yeah, it's augmented reality or mixed reality, as they like to say, because that sounds better than augmented reality. That sounds scary to people. But
I'm sure in 20 years this is going to be a big thing. The same thing they said when Lawnmower Man came out.
That's true. They did say that. I remember them saying that.
I remember being a kid. We had the glove. Yeah, the glasses. Kids were throwing up all over their couches. Like, the whole world was going to change. And I'm thinking, like, how much realer are you going to make the world that's real? I don't. Okay.
No, when we were kids, they were saying, Virtual Boy, this is where it all begins. It's only going to go up from here.
Same sales pitch, bro. Yeah. Same sales pitch.
Mike, any final words? Are you getting one of these when it comes out? Are you dedicated to the platform? Because, I mean, you know, it's a dev kit, but that doesn't necessarily mean that only developers need to have all the fun, right? You could get one.
If it was cheaper, I would definitely get one. And I think I said this last time I was on, but like the Vive and the Rift are cool enough and so interesting enough and cheaper a little bit that I'm actually considering getting a Windows computer for the first time in 15 years.
Nice.
Maybe that's the secret. Maybe that's what they want.
That's the motive. Yeah. Thank you so much for hopping on once again, Mike Murphy at Quartz. Tell people where they can follow all your work online.
Well, the best place on the internet is my Twitter, MCWM, that and QZ.com, where all my stories live.
Fantastic. Really appreciate it, Mike. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem.
Thank you.
On Friday, we talked to Addie Robertson from The Verge about how the roots of the self-driving car project began with a dream of the PRT, or Personal Rapid Transit. This inspired many of you to write in with your own experiences with mass transit and how slowly it moves through the political process. Ken Hill writes, enjoyed listening tonight. Being an Atlanta native, I remember our mass transit, MARTA, service in the 70s. Since that original plan, Atlanta has added 1.8 miles of additional track in 40 years. And in case you're listening to this and not watching, he also included a sad face.
Yes, the emoticon is actually very important because it can really change the meaning, as we'll find out at the end of today's show. Yeah.
So, Owen, what do you think? Are you a mass transit rider? Or you said you like to drive, so I'm guessing.
Yeah, I live in the burbs, so I am totally self-sufficient. But when I am in the city, as long as the weather is perfect, I have no problem with mass transit, subway, train, bus, all this stuff's fine.
Yeah, I think the promise was that even if you were in the suburbs, this would still work for you. And, well, here we are 50 years later.
Yeah.
Again, turns out promises.
Exactly.
That might just be the title of today's episode.
There's actually Uber around my way now, which is interesting. You know, when I go and check it out, like there's like at least like 8 cars in my area, which is insane because just 6 months ago there were none. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
Things are expanding.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We have Uber and Lyft in our tiny town of Petaluma as well. Well, coming up, why some things do not need to connect to the internet. But first, let's take a minute to thank PillPack. There are so many things I need to remember in a day, and when I forget most of them, the results are not disastrous. But when I forget to refill prescriptions for myself or my family, it can be really scary. PillPack is my mother's little helper. It was founded by a second-generation pharmacist inspired to use technology and design to fix the pharmacy and deliver a better customer service experience. Your PillPack arrives in a convenient, recyclable dispenser. It has one easy-to-read label that includes an image of each medication and directions. So PillPack pre-sorts and delivers your medications and vitamins into these easy-to-tear packets right here. They are individually labeled for the date and time for each dose. And PillPack uses robots and digital imaging technology along with pharmacist oversight to ensure the accuracy of every pill pack. People are still an important part of the equation. PillPack's pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home, so no more long lines or awkward conversations at the pharmacy. They also proactively call your doctor for you to manage all your refills so you will never run out. No extra costs beyond your standard copays. Shipping is always free. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer any of your medications over. Switching is easy. You sign up on their secure site and they take care of everything for you. PillPack has been recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention, and Jill Duffy also gave it a great review in PC Magazine. She named PillPack an editor's choice health service. There's also a PillPack medication reminder app on the iPhone and on my Apple Watch. PillPack is simple, convenient, and modern, and you won't believe how cool it is until you try it. Here's what you can do. Visit pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is beautiful. It only takes 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/TWIT. So no matter how many times your kindergarten teacher reminded you to push in your chair, I can bet that some of you out there probably still do not do it. Sometimes, I'm pointing to you, you know those of you who push in your chair and don't. Maybe you need a self-driving chair.
Are you saying I don't push in my chair?
You sometimes don't push in your chair. Oh, sharing an office with you, I know that you don't.
It's true. I probably forget.
How about you, Owen? Are you a chair pusher, inner, or are you a whatever? Leave it wherever it is. Who cares?
I am the king of my domain, and it is not my job to put away chairs. If a chair wants to get put away, it better put itself away.
Oh. Okay. Well, I know you talked on your podcast about these self-driving chairs. why don't you talk a little bit about it?
It's a cool thing. If you ever been in like a board meeting, it's annoying because there's so many chairs you can get. Either it's full table or it's not a full table. You got to like squeeze in the chairs and get them back. So the fact that you could just get up and walk out of a room and the chairs put themselves away is super awesome. I don't know if the chairs, they always show them putting away, but I wanted to know if they like pull themselves out from the table because then you just walk in and then the chairs. I think it's cool. I mean, it's one of those things where a person told me about the story and they thought I'd be mad because this is such a lazy thing. But I'm saying, if somebody's got to come in and vacuum and clean up the room, it's just nice that the chairs are already put away. It's a great thing. I think it's super neat. I love it.
So it's called the intelligent parking chair. It turns 360 degrees. It uses 4 cameras to locate its target position wirelessly and transmit the chair's position en route and the destination. It's funny. You like to drive, but you don't like to park your chair. That makes sense.
Well, I'm not scooting around. I don't know if it scoots around with a person sitting in it. Oh, somebody's sitting in it.
Yep, there you go.
Okay, well, never mind, man.
Just don't crush that person. Stop when you get to the table, chair.
Yeah, and again, I'm trying to figure out how much these chairs cost. But again, this reminds me of a Roomba with a seat on it. So, you know, I like to drive my car. I don't want to drive my chair. That'd be cool. You could just scoot around. Yeah. Chair.
These chairs have Silicon Valley written all over them. Offices in Silicon Valley, tech companies in Silicon Valley don't have enough things to spend their money on. So why don't we get automated chairs that push themselves in for you?
Mm-hmm.
What movie does this remind you of in the apocalypse of human beings?
WALL-E?
WALL-E indeed.
Mm-hmm. This is the beginning of WALL-E. I think we're witnessing it right now.
If Leo gets those chairs in the office, you'll be big as me inside of 9 months. Oh.
Now, in order to get the chairs to move, you do a single clap. Oh. What I'm wondering is if you have a clapper and you do 2 claps, does that confuse the chairs? They'll turn your lights off, but what do the chairs do?
Who has the clapper?
You know what? Honestly, the clapper might make a comeback. In this world of Internet of Things, you never know. It's like the right time.
We got an apper. We don't have the clapper anymore. No. We got apps for that. I travel to my home. My lights turn on. My lights turn off. I don't clap nothing. I don't tap nothing. I got geofencing, homie.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so how about this? How about this then? Brita, the water filtration system, now has a new pitcher. Why are we talking about this on a technology show? It's filled with sensors, of course, and connected to Wi-Fi. It's called the Brita Infinity. It tracks when 40 gallons of water have been filtered. Once that's done, your new filters are reordered using Amazon Dash replenishment system. Is this for you, Owen? Is it? As he takes a big drink out of a cup.
As a lifelong water connoisseur and a 3 Brita container owner, I think this is the best thing in the world. I know that it's not. I know that it's stupid. But let me just look. Brita comes with this stupid little thing. It's a little digital screen that you press it and it tells you how many months have gone by. Any kid, any adult, anybody picks up with their thumb and presses it, it gets erased. You don't remember when the last time you peeled the filter in. Then they have another thing with a sticker, and you put the circle on the month that you got it, and you still don't remember to refill the thing. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, you're like, man, this water tastes horrible. When's the last time I changed it? 3 years ago? This is amazing. This is so amazing. It's amazing. Fresh water all the time. I don't have to think. 40 gallons new at my door. They should have been at this. Brita is on the cutting edge of the world as we know it. Brita has just hired Stephen Curry as their sponsor. Not Coca-Cola, not Pepsi, not horrible acidy things to destroy your body. But Brita is out here doing stuff for the future. You don't understand. You don't appreciate it. You're laughing at me, but this is serious business. Somebody should buy me one for Christmas early because Christmas is a long way away and I need one ASAP.
Well, your birthday probably comes before Christmas, right?
True story. Birthday present. Thank you. See, I love you so much. Now just me.
You just solved it for
okay.
For
so if it's not our self-driving cars or self-driving chairs that are going to kill us, it's the consistent ordering things that we don't need it. It's all the Amazon Dash stuff. That's what we're going to be buried in our stuff we didn't order because some computer is dialing
tells
into Amazon.
Us that we
you
need it.
This. Yeah, that's the you apocalyptic scenario I'm imagining.
You need fresh water,
but not the filters. I mean, how can you trust that? Then you need a new filter. You're just trusting that you need a new filter. What if you don't?
It's It's science. How do you trust that global warming is real because somebody smarter than us made the system? And yes, the system might fail every once in a while, but in general, the products usually work. So, as a human being, you have human error of not knowing when you're 40. Don't ruin my dream. I already gave up on the HoloLens. You're not going to ruin this for me.
Okay. Well, I'm the one that said to get it for your birthday.
Yeah, if you need water and you want your water fresh, that's something you want to come to your door. It's not like it's coming every 3 months. It's coming when you need it. And we need water to live. They should send these to Flint, Michigan. Get them good water.
This is just a glimpse into our future where
everything's Wi-Fi.
Yeah, where water pitchers having Wi-Fi connectivity is not an abnormal thing. It's just a way of life.
Your sneakers have Wi-Fi when they get worn down. Your jacket has Wi-Fi. When the temperature drops, it's not keeping you warm enough.
We're never going to have to make any decisions for ourselves ever. This is going to be a great future. We're moving so fast to Wally. I can hardly stand it.
Yeah. How about the technology to just make water clearer and cleaner and safer for everybody? Can we work on that technology?
That's a good idea. That's a good idea, too.
But I still can get you that right now. Birthday. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So this last thing is definitely less useful than those two other things that I thought were not useful. But you might have seen this MacBook selfie stick. It is exactly what it sounds, although it's not a real product as much as I would love it to be. It's a creative project by some New York City artists. But that doesn't mean someone just didn't see it and is making it for themselves.
You know it's in the works.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why it exists, but you know somebody's working on it. Why? Because it exists.
But it would be, but it's heavy. It's heavy. Yeah. That's the only
issue. It does look very heavy. And I'm not sure that I feel okay just like, you know, trusting myself holding my heavy laptop out there on a pole. You never know when like a condor is going to fly by and run into your laptop and knock it on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's the world we live in.
It's true. So.
I feel as though you two have put these stories in here to line me up for like home run hits because... Let me just tell you. Let me phrase this in a way that the upcoming story won't land me in jail.
Okay.
If you happen to have a selfie stick of this nature, you might kill yourself. I'm not saying you should kill yourself, but I'm saying you might. And the advent that selfies are killing more people than sharks, and you think to put this on a stick, and if you ever make this real, if this ever becomes law, you might just kill yourself. And good on you, because it's stupid.
I see what you're saying. So you want a desktop selfie stick, is what you're saying. The desktop computer selfie stick. That's what you need?
If you're not Leo Laporte, you don't have $2,000 to just dump off of a stick every 5 minutes when somebody bumps into you in a crowded room. But, I mean, God bless you if that's your thing to do.
We already have a desktop selfie stick. Our desk.
Hmm.
Think about
it. Good point. Yes.
Okay.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they hired me is for little things like that.
That's the only reason you've been around so long.
Yes, genius. Exactly. All right, thanks. We did know that you'd probably enjoy those stories, and we enjoyed them too. So thanks for running through those with us. TNT's fan of the day is Brian Parker, who emailed us this picture saying, quote, how I watch TNT washing baby bottles. I so know that picture right there. I don't miss washing those things one bit. It gets better. Okay, I'm just saying it gets better. So just you'll survive. You'll get through it, Brian. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself, whatever you want to do, of your setup, your post. Should go to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you have it, wherever your favorite platform is. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. All right, up next, the language of emoji and how it's becoming more and more admissible in court cases. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. And that's right, it's time to get hungry because the sponsor today is NatureBox. NatureBox is the AAA of snacks. I have a box filled with snacks right here in front. Oh, it smells really good. Here, I'm going to hand it to you, Megan. When hunger strikes, don't reach for that half-eaten bag of chips. Be prepared with smart and delicious snacks from NatureBox. All of NatureBox's snacks are made with high-quality ingredients, all of which you can trust. Trying to eat healthier doesn't mean that you're giving up on flavor. They have vegan. They have no sugar added. Non-GMO options. You can choose savory, sweet, salty, tart. You can choose from over 100 unique and tasty options. Things like sweet blueberry almonds. Let's see if I can get like the food voice. Sweet blueberry almonds. Sriracha cashew crunch. Plus, you can fill out your own snack profile.
I didn't know there was a food voice.
Well, Santa Fe corn sticks. You can fill out your own snack profile and do your own food voice. Get personalized recommendations based on your preferences. The best part, NatureBox delivers right to your door in a box just like this. This big box full of snacks that you eat. Fuel your game engine with healthy snacks. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. That's naturebox.com/twit. Go there. Get 50% off your first box of delicious personalized snacks sent directly to your doorstep and do your own food voice and send it in tnt@twit.tv. We want to hear it.
Those pineapple chips are amazing.
Ooh, yeah.
I am a fan of the pineapple.
Pineapple chips.
And you don't have to cut the pineapple yourself, which is the hardest thing to do in the world. That's the best part. Yeah. It is, really. Mm-hmm.
We got people for that. We got NatureBox for that.
Yeah, exactly. All right. The Washington Post reports that a 12-year-old girl who posted to Instagram a passage containing, among other things, "Meet me in the library Tuesday," followed by the emoji gun, knife, and bomb, has been charged with threatening the school and with computer harassment. Kids these days, what do you guys think about this? I think kids need to know what their language means, and whether it's emoji or words, it matters, but I don't know.
I mean, in the case of this, she's 12 years old, like, mm-hmm. she's pretty darn young, so I'm not sure that, yeah, I mean, obviously she doesn't know that the weight of that, but it does pose the question, like, do symbols equate in the same way that words do to intent? What do you think, Owen?
This annoys me because it's a child. And children, right. again, say and do dumb things. Now, mind you, some kids have gone into schools and done terrible things. But if you went around looking through, this school must be very active, because I know you can go to 1,000 different kids right now and find them saying way worse things directly mm-hmm. in their social media about their school or a friend or a person or anything, or anyone for that matter. If you look online, it's like, you know, pull up hashtag Donald Trump. There's like a million death threats on his life right now because he's crazy and people are upset with him. It doesn't mean they're going to do something. So when you do this to children, like, what do you really think you're going to get out of it? Like, because that kid was mad that day and said something. Like, you know, maybe be more aware of it. But to take them to court and to arrest them, I would just say, you know, send a cop over to their house. Talk to their parents about it. Make somebody aware. But they're just going to extreme lengths. And I guess you just don't know where you stop with it. Like, yeah. do you cut the age off at 15 or 18? I don't know. But it makes me feel wrong. Like, it doesn't feel right at all.
Well, so remove age then. And, I mean, because this, according to this article especially, like, there are multiple things happening right now where emoji is kind of called into play, where... does it mean a threat when somebody uses a knife emoji? And, you know, does that carry the same weight as words? Like I said, should emoji be considered as evidence just in general? Like, things like a winky face at the end of a sentence completely changes when you're used to seeing, you know, and working with emoji, completely changes the intent of that sentence. So they obviously carry a lot of meaning, and people use emoji because it's a way of getting across emotion. It's just interesting that in the eyes of the courts, what's easy for us to understand from an emotional standpoint when we talk to people with emoji is hard to interpret in the court aspect.
It's hard to interpret in real life.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So.
There's a fun commercial right now at ESPN where the coach is, you know, saying, text the guy who's doing really good in the game. And he has his son texting him. He's like, tell him he's doing really great and he's on fire right now. The kid sends a couple arm pumps, a basketball, and flamethrowers. And he's like, done. He says, great job, Dad. And he sends, like, it's so convoluted to what the interpretation is and what people know. And that usually you learn over time with someone of using certain emojis of what you mean with that person. Again, I guess it's another one of those things about the accident. Until there's an emoji killer, I mean, how far do you want to go with people expressing language that is violent when people say dumb things? Like, you know, you fail a test. Oh, I wish I could kill my teacher. Mm-hmm. Now, is that something you prosecute a child for when they're mm-hmm. just, again, that's so, I don't know what to do with that. Age, or it's like you said, take age out of it just in that instant. You know, I went to work today. My boss switched up the schedule. I could kill that guy. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that? Mm-hmm. Like, are you arresting everybody? Because you make a general statement, I don't I don't know.
Well, it's this lack of context, which I think is like what the problem with Twitter and the problem with so many things. It's like we don't even want it anymore. Like this headline is, you know, catches your eye, a 12-year-old girl facing criminal charges because of emoji. And it's like, okay, that's a real girl that like either she has a problem where she is threatening people really or not. But it doesn't really have anything to do with emoji, really. I mean, I think, yes, I mean, she needs to be taught that you're, you know, when you write something on the internet, when you send something, it means something and people read it and people are paying attention to you. But, you know, and I think it is interesting to think whether, well, is emoji speech or is it not? It is. But yeah, I think that it's one of those things where it's like, this was a great headline and, you know, we knew talking about it would, you know, we mm-hmm. would discuss it. We wouldn't just say, yes, she should be charged or no, she shouldn't. But yeah, but I mean, so the lack of context is what you're talking about exactly, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, lack of context and definition. Like words have a very specific definition. Like you say a word and we usually, you know, there is a definition behind that word and it makes it easy to kind of understand, you know, what a sentence actually equates to. Mm-hmm. Emoji is a symbol that represents something. It might represent some guy levitating. Or, you know what I mean? It can mean a million different things. There is no definition for them.
Last note on this. I'll give you an example of a story of something that happened, and I'll give you what happened in this instant. In this instant, I think that someone is either trying to make a name for themselves. They might be running for, you know, not the mayor, but the DA or something like that, and they're trying to make a case out of something because things like this seem to go viral, again, with the headline. Another example of something that is real internet bullying to me. A girl was jumped by four girls. It's on video. The girls, all four of the girls shared it on their social media, on their Twitter. The girl that got jumped and beat up had to quit school. She was embarrassed. She has all kinds of physical problems. The four girls that are on tape that shared it all throughout her school, it's been 6 months now, and they still haven't been charged with anything. And you can physically see them assaulting her on tape, and no one's done anything yet. So when I hear stories like this, I'm like, well, who's trying to make a name for themselves over something that, again, you could have went and talked to a parent about face-to-face. Again, even if you send a police officer there. But sometimes I feel like people are just trying to escape technology and make technology this big thing when sometimes it's not.
A lot of that, I think, right now.
Yeah.
And time and time again, it's a lot of scapegoating around technology.
Right. I mean, the implication behind this Washington Post headline is like, oh, well, if she didn't have a phone and if there weren't emojis, she would be fine and she wouldn't be either threatening or feeling threatened and, you know, sending this text. Like, that's not true. Like, this has nothing to do with technology, really. It's just, you know, life.
It is.
Well, Owen, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure. I have been disagreeing with you or agreeing with you or shouting at you through the podcast for many years. But now it was nice to get to have some actual feedback.
Yeah, shout at you on our show.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Now, normally when someone says they disagree with me, I'd have your mic cut. But since it's our first interaction, I'm going to let that slide from here, you know. But, you know, for the general part, I'm always right. Even when I'm wrong, I generally assume that I'm right on any given subject. By the way, if you go home and you feel bad about the end of this story, the show, just look at cat videos. Cat videos fixes everything.
Okay. I disagree with you about that. It's dog videos, actually.
I love dogs. I'm a dog person. But guess what? Dogs aren't stupid. Cats are stupid. If you just want to feel good and happy, cat videos. Dogs are champions of life and their companions. Cats are fools for our amusement. See what I mean about me always being right?
It's true. You are right. I realize you are always right.
Horrible situation.
Email thoughts at tnt@twit.tv. Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Always a pleasure getting you on the shows. IQMZ.com to find all that he's up to. Tomorrow's guest will be Serenity Caldwell from iMore. Another awesome guest. We keep doing that. Mm-hmm. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always be a part of the show. Just email us at tnt@twit.tv or leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. You can hit us up on Twitter. The show is at Tech News Today TV.
You can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. You can use whatever podcast catcher you want, and it's all there. Video, audio, whatever you want to listen or watch, whatever you want to use to listen or watch our show is there. You can also subscribe to the Twit newsletter, or you can follow us on Facebook. The newsletter is at twit.tv/newsletter. And if you want to send me a tweet, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I am at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Anthony Nielsen, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thank you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.